it's time. It is that time. Time for Styles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Styles and Chris Watkins.
Yes, yes, yes. On a Monday. Don't need to look at my Apple Watch this time, Chris. That's Styles right. And Watkins taking you up to 2 p.m. Simone behind the glass. The vibes are right. Going to be an extremely warm week. So get out, enjoy that vitamin D. Get it going. The Kings got it going last night, 107-77. They defeat the lowly Brooklyn Nets. But hey, they took care of business as they have to with the season coming to a close. Eclipse today, right? I don't know if you have plans. My mom asking me about whether we have plans for the eclipse, so check that out. But also check us out. We will be out and about at Fieldhouse American Sports Pub tonight, 5-7, for the national championship. You mentioned Sactown Sports. You get a free, what? I can't say free fries. Now they have me scared from crosstalk. You get a free basket of fries.
There you go.
To go with that delicious burger, to go with some beverages, to go with those delicious chicken wings. 5-7, we will be out there. We're also giving away one more VIP situation, one more booth. So call in. That's at 12 p.m., and we will take care of you. We will let you know the lucky caller, that number, what it will be. And the Kings, Chris, they got us off to a great start because the week technically starts on Sunday. So they got us off to a great start. We're still talking A's. 1 o'clock, we're talking all things A's. We're also breaking down Colby Jones. South Carolina wins the women's national championship. We will be talking about the men's as well. But the future of Caitlin Clark. Chris Watkins, how you doing?
Great. Yeah, it was a fantastic weekend. Yeah, you said it best right when you came into the office today. You were like, it's one of those days where I think we might have too much to get to.
So definitely
might leave a little bit on the table, but that just means better content for the rest of the week. So excited. As we are in, Alan Styles, the final week of regular season basketball, and the Kings are a game back. Even all that we've talked this past couple months about the Kings being up and down and, oh, the season's cooked, all that. Even today, they sit one game out of not a play-in, but a playoff spot with, again, we say their destiny in their own hands. If they take care of business, it sounds like a big task, but if they go undefeated the rest of this season, taking out OKC on Tuesday, they play New Orleans, who's the 7th seed on Thursday. Mm-hmm. They play Phoenix, who's the 6th seed on Friday. Everything is right in front of Sacramento to take this advantage and still somehow, some way, clinch a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And now that I've said that, I'm deathly worried that they're going to do all three of those things and then lose to the Blazers on Sunday. So
stop.
Why would you officially say that? Because once I said it out loud, I was like, oh man, that all sounds great. It all sounds possible. And then I remembered there's one more game after that. So I have to keep the Kings, this is hurt people, and I'm clearly a hurt person.
Well, what was his name? What, Skylar Mays? Was it Skylar Mays?
That's his name?
Well, he's not on the team anymore.
Well, Duop Reith is, and he killed us in the second game. So.
Will you stop it? The Kings are going to take care of business. If they come that far, I will not be worried about that Blazers game at all. And it's at home, correct?
They got us right where we want us. Right where they want us.
That's true. That is true. The first thing I want to say about the game yesterday is just simply put, they took care of business.
Yes.
Which is not something that the Kings have really done consistently throughout the season, which is why you're bringing up the Blazers. But before we get to that, there is plenty to talk about as far as the games that are coming. Also, the Celtics game. Didn't get to chat about the Celtics game. And that one, I'll tell you what, I want to spend a good amount of time on that because I think so many people are in, I guess, different headspaces on that game. So we'll break that game down as well. And Colby Jones, I mean, showing up the way he did. Certain guys not showing up. It's getting worse now, Chris. Harrison Barnes, 11 minutes. Okay, and I know it was a blowout, but 2 points. All right, Keon Ellis, he's still doing his thing defensively, but you've definitely seen him look like a two-way player, right? It hasn't been as locked down. We have a superstar in the making, and that's Coach Mike Brown has told us this is what is going to happen with a young player. So pump your brakes, and I think we're all beginning to do that. But now it's time for Frank Facts.
Oh, man, yes. You can check out Frankie Cardicelli's articles at the end of every Sacramento Kings game over on SactownSports.com. You can also read his previews. I'm pretty sure with this being such an important week, at the very least, I know before the most important games, Frankie's going to have something up there on SactownSports.com. So just go on and check the website for all things Kings this week to help you navigate through what will certainly be just a hectic week. I mean, day by day, there's no games today because of the NCAA championship game. But starting tomorrow, this thing is going to be a daily shuffleboard on the standings. So definitely get prepared with SactownSports.com and Frankie Cardicelli, who's always going to lead you in the right direction. And now let's get into some Frank Facts. The win brought the Kings one game behind the sixth seed Phoenix Suns, who hold the final playoff spot in the West with just four games remaining. It was a rocky start for the Sacramento Kings after falling behind 14-7. Davion Mitchell came in with 10 points during the first quarter, and the Kings ended the period on a 22-5 run to take a 10-point lead into the second period. The Kings would then end the first half after finishing the first quarter on a 22-5 run. They would close out that second quarter on a 20-4 run, outscoring the Nets 58-26 in the final 18 minutes of the first half. Just sheer and utter domination. However, that's kind of where the domination stopped, because the Kings missed their first 10 field goals to begin the quarter. I'm going scoreless the first 5:22 of the period. Brooklyn trimmed their lead to as much as 15 points. Keegan established a new career high in blocks with 4. His previous high was 3 earlier in this season. The Kings improved to, here's a number, 13-22 when shooting under 35% from beyond the three-point range. That's been something we've talked about all year long. When this team doesn't hit shots, they normally don't win games. And thankfully, they were playing the Brooklyn Nets yesterday, who were just terrible. I mean, yeah, that 10 straight missed field goals, 5 minutes of not a single point, and all Brooklyn could do was cut the lead to 15. So the Kings were definitely fortunate to be playing one of the most downed teams in the NBA, the most down bad team, you could argue, in the NBA. The Brooklyn Nets just have absolutely no life to them. The Kings are 26-6 now, an 8-12 win percentage when passing out 30-plus assists. We talked about that De'Aaron Fox 7-plus assist number, but when the team in total is just passing it around, and obviously big part of assists is making shots, when you're moving the ball around and hitting your shots, usually that leads to good things for Sacramento. So again, 26-6 when 30 plus assists. And now moving on to the double-double machine, the just constant professional that is Domantas Sabonis. He gets a double-double for the 61st consecutive game on Sunday, breaking a tie with Hall of Fame big Elgin Baylor for the 7th longest streak in NBA history. Sabonis now leads the NBA in double-doubles with 73, triple-doubles with 26, but he also leads the league in games with 20-plus rebounds. He has 8 of those. And those are your Frank Facts for Sunday's game against the Brooklyn Nets.
One thing I saw from our guy Brendan Nunes, he was responding to somebody talking about Sabonis missing bunnies.
Yes.
And we've talked about this on the show, and Brendan said it's funny because Sabonis is at 70%, which is the same as Jokic.
Yeah.
And it feels like he misses a bunch of bunnies, but apparently he actually doesn't. Or he misses them at the same clip as Jokic. So it's not really an issue, but it feels like it at times.
I think that's one of those things where I believe, you know, I think numbers are a thing to supplement the eye test. And I think if the eye test tells me one thing, but the numbers don't, I'm still going to lean towards what I'm seeing with my eyes. And I still think Sabonis misses an inordinate amount of bunnies.
Yeah.
So tough. So tough. And like, I kind of think he misses a lot of bunnies.
It feels like
I think the numbers are just all of his shots come around the rim where, you know, maybe Jokic isn't taking it. You know, Jokic does some mid-range, does some threes, and so it doesn't look as concentrated. But when all of Sabonis' shots are within 5 feet of the rim and he's missing three or four of them a game, it's like, well, yeah, you know, that's just kind of stacks up.
Yeah, and the main thing is he's still extremely productive, right? But there are games where you just think, man, it feels like a lot. And that's why I always say, you know, they say numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the whole truth. And that's also what I would say in that situation.
Yeah, like, but we have had conversations about, like, touch. Is touch something that can be taught? To me, him missing those bunnies is yet another example of, and that's where eye test really pans out. It's like, okay, so if I say he can't shoot mid-ranges because it doesn't seem like he has that soft touch, mm-hmm. and then around the rim, he has a tendency to just kind of throw it off the backboard mm-hmm. and sometimes clank it, that tells me he doesn't have good touch. Period. And I just don't know, again, if that's something, it's like, you know, with free throws, they'll say, oh, if you're a good free throw shooter, that means that there's a plausible reasoning that you could become a good three-point shooter because right. it means, you know, you're hitting open looks. It's just a little bit further. So if you're missing close shots, I just don't think that that's going to mean, oh, yeah, but your mid-range touch or your three-point touch can be improved. I think it just kind of means you don't have good touch.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The other thing, big takeaway for me from the game, at least lately, is, Chris, did you ever think, I mean, this is crazy now, did you ever think that you'd feel more confident with Davion Mitchell taking a three than Keegan Murray? I mean, that...
I still don't.
As of right now, if when Davion Mitchell takes a shot, and it's more of a testament to Davion
than Keegan. I know. I was like, I don't think
Keegan.
One has to be put down for
no,
one to be
but,
put
but,
up.
No, but that's how I feel right now.
I still feel really confident about Keegan hitting an open look. Yeah. I just think he's taking a lot of volume right mm-hmm. now, and so he's kind of not taking shots he's comfortable with. But, I mean, yeah, no, Davion is, I think Katie said on the broadcast, since the start of February, shooting like 47%
from three.
I mean, yeah, he's been dynamite for sure.
When we return, continuing the conversation, the Kings take care of business. Surprise, surprise. It actually is a bit of a surprise. Also breaking down all things A's and looking forward to the Kings showdown in Oklahoma City. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. The Kings take care of business, and there's a lot to be happy about there. And Chris, on games like this or shows like this, after games like that, we can be very positive, but we also have to keep it real. I mean, the Nets, they might be one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, that was bad.
That was
bad. So as much as we're praising the Kings for taking care of business, the reality is that was a gimme.
Yeah.
You needed it, right? Yeah. And you're not going to have another gimme like that until the last game of the season. And I'm just assuming the Blazers are better than that.
I would guess so because, like, again, the Kings scored, what, 107 points? Went 5 minutes scoreless and won by 30.
That's crazy.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Mikal Bridges deserves so much better. Get him out of there.
He's going to go to the Knicks. I was thinking about this the other day, and it makes sense. I mean, he's already in Brooklyn. Got the Villanova situation. The Donovan Mitchell thing seems like it's kind of quieted. I don't know, just in terms of the specific interest in New York. I think the Mikal Bridges thing makes a lot of sense, and he does not need... I don't know what's going on in Brooklyn. That must be one of the toughest teams, and this is coming from a Sacramento Kings mm-hmm. station here. The Brooklyn Nets supporting them must be one of the toughest things in these past 10 years. After the whole, you know, traded all their picks to the mm-hmm. Celtics and missed out on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and then to go through, you know, weird years
the
and
KD,
then get
Kyrie
KD, Kyrie,
stuff.
That Harden. Blows up in less than a year or a year mm-hmm. and some change, and now you're stuck with Cam Thomas putting up 30 shots a game.
He is a bucket, though.
He sure tries.
He definitely tries to be a bucket, and the Kings weren't necessarily a bucket either.
No.
And again, there's plenty of good things to talk about. We're going to get into Colby Jones and how important he could be going down the stretch, which is another feather in the cap to Coach Mike Brown. We saw Colby Jones earlier this season, then didn't see him again, and here he pops up in the Celtics game. And he plays pretty well. And then we see him play legit minutes, basically taking Duarte's spot in the rotation against the Nets. But I do have to ask, and I know we've asked this before, and I see it on the YouTube. I see it on the Sack Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines as well. 916-339-1140. All guests and callers, join us from the Folsom Honda Hotline. Folsom Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Chris, what is the deal with halftime? Why are they so bad coming out of halftime?
I don't have a good answer. I mean, there's, you know, it could just be lack of momentum or lack of ability to kind of create your own energy. I don't really have a good answer for it. You know, it has been a couple games in a row now where they've struggled to come out and look different at halftime. I don't know, man. I really don't know. I wish I had a good answer for you, but that's definitely going to be a problem moving forward.
That's how I feel. It wasn't a problem last night. You take care of business. But again, things are going to get much harder from here on out. And the Thunder, they're still fighting for seeding. Everybody is fighting in the West, those top 10 teams, for something, right? I think the only team not really fighting would be the Clippers.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's essentially it. But, you know, the Kings, they really did what they were supposed to do, winning 107-77. The box score, Sabonis, 18 points, 20 rebounds. Keegan Murray, 19 points. And it felt like Keegan sleptwalked through a good portion of the game and then just woke up. And to the tune of 19 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. There goes your playmaking aspect for Keegan Murray. De'Aaron Fox, a game where he was a little quiet, but he could afford to be a little bit quiet. You know, 20 points, 3 assists, 5 rebounds as well. The bench chimed in. Trey Lyles, 14 points. I really like what I'm seeing from Trey Lyles ever since he came back from that injury. He's really been rocking and rolling, and the Kings truly need it. And Davion Mitchell, 2-for-5 from three-point range, 4-for-4 from the free throw line.
Love it.
Talk about it. 12 points as well. 3 assists, more of that playmaking aspect. I mean, crazy numbers here, Chris. I know we go back on the plus or minus, and when you blow a team out, things are going to be absurd. But Davion Mitchell was a plus 36 in 28 minutes, and that wasn't actually the highest plus on the evening. Trey Lyles was a plus 37 in 29 minutes. Just absurd. And I know the Brooklyn Nets are in the dumpster, but you really got to be happy as a palate cleanser coming off that Celtics game that we will break down, but really just great effort all around from the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the bench points to me is the big thing. 42-26 advantage on the bench points. Yeah, Trey Lyles and Davion really just step up, and that's been the trend since really Malik went down. I think those two have definitely stepped up their games the most since those two have kind of gone down, and it's came at just the right time. I mean, you see Davion knocking his threes down at a high clip, the 12 points from him, and just the ability to stay on the floor and impact games. Like, I think it's huge for Davion to kind of be, I guess you can say, taking this leap at the end of the year. You just absolutely love to see it after his opportunities have kind of been stifled a bit because of just how many players the Kings feel like they need to get in there. You absolutely love to see it. And then, yeah, Trey Lyles, who's had, I don't know, it's been a weird season from Trey, where you look at his numbers, and I think technically all of his numbers are better than it was last year, but last year he just felt like he was a little bit more impactful, and I think the guy that we've seen, again, these past couple weeks has been a lot more of the Trey Lyles that we got last year. Hitting threes, kind of, you know, mixing it up with attacking the rim. I think yesterday he had 10 rebounds as well. He finished with 10 rebounds in yesterday's game, 2 blocks. I know they didn't play him at that backup center, but those are the numbers that make you feel like, okay, if we needed to go to a smaller lineup, the fact that Trey still gets boards and still protects the rim, to me, those are the two biggest numbers that you need to see from Trey if you're trying to. I know yesterday on the broadcast, they talked about Colby Jones and how he allows them to be a little bit more versatile of a lineup. Yeah. Trey putting up those numbers allows the Kings to be that much more versatile and have that many more options to go to in any game, really.
Yeah, and on the defensive end, I mean, I know that they're a dumpster fire, but holding Mikal Bridges to 8 points is outstanding.
Love it.
Dennis Schroeder he scored 4 points.
Even 12
Cam Thomas, who you know he's going to try to put it up, they held him to 21 points. He was 8 of 18, 2-for-7 from three-ball land. So defensively, you know, anybody can get hot. Even Alonnie Walker, we've seen him in the playoffs the last season get hot. He played 25 minutes and only scored 6 points. So the defense showed up.
Yeah.
Yes, we understand who it was against, but it's better than, what we've seen before. Yeah. Mikal Bridges with the career night against the Kings. We've seen it all.
And that's how they lose that game.
And that's how they lose that game. But instead,
did you know Kevin Ollie was their coach? I had no idea.
No.
I watched tons of basketball. Yeah. I had not a single clue Kevin Ollie was their head coach.
He left UConn and disappeared until last night he appeared. And yeah, shout out Kevin Ollie.
Shout out Kevin Ollie. That was my thought. I was like, hey, UConn's in the final. Kevin Ollie's coaching Brooklyn,
I guess. Right. And now I would assume what's going to happen is Brooklyn's going to revamp. Kevin Ollie will no longer be the coach.
Exactly. Poor guy.
What's going to happen. But hey, he's getting an opportunity to show something to someone. And that's exactly what the Kings did. They showed all the Kings fans what they can do and what we expect from them moving forward, regardless of the competition. Coming up next, we break down Colby Jones. How did he end up in the rotation? And does he deserve to stay there? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. On the Sack Chat, those that can see us, Aaron says, orange, you glad you turned into Styles and Watkins? We're both wearing a version of orange.
I guess, yeah, yours is like more of a burnt.
Mine's more of an auburn.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yours, I think, is auburn's is a little more orange or a little more red, but.
Simone?
It's fine.
Yeah, you have like a brick red going on to me.
A Brickford red.
A Brickford red. Yeah.
Well, hey.
Color is subjective, of course.
There you go. Yeah. We'll come out tonight, and you make the call tonight.
You make the call.
What color shirt is Alan wearing if you are in the car right now or cannot see us, but you will be at Fieldhouse American Sports Pub? And why wouldn't you be?
That's right.
Am I allowed?
You better be there. It's going to be a problem if you're not there.
Awesome. I think I'm going to make it happen.
Definitely over under people asking where Simone.
Oh man, it's gonna be at least two.
I'm saying four and a half.
Yeah, I was saying four and a half.
Yeah,
I'm super friendly. I don't bite. So
there you go. Yeah, pictures, autographs.
I guess
get Simone's John Hancock if you so choose. And we are doing a special edition of Prop Talk,
where we
will choose players from the national championship today. Zach Edey, rebounds. Okay, did you see, by the way, Tracy Wolfson, did you see her in the stepladder? So I had a problem with that. I had a problem with that because when she got on the stepladder, she ended up being taller than the coach.
Too tall.
If I'm the coach, I'm saying, hey, take one step down.
Yeah, didn't need to do that.
Take one step down. You got me looking crazy.
Come on. Yeah.
You got me looking crazy out here. And we will see what Zach Edey and the Purdue Boilermakers do tonight against the UConn Huskies, who just look like a buzzsaw.
Yeah, well, they're getting ready for the NBA playoffs. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Eastern Conference. They're in the play-in. And Chris and I will give our predictions and prop talk later in the show around 1:30. So you do not want to miss that. We do want to continue to talk about Colby Jones. And Chris, the way he showed up was outstanding.
Crazy.
Did you see it coming? Because this is what happens. You just never know. And maybe that's part of the reason we don't believe this team is going to win a championship. But it does make it fun. You literally never know who is going to play in the next game. Kessler Edwards might pop up. We thought he was going to break into the rotation. Now it's Colby Jones. We think he might break into the rotation. What did you see from Colby Jones? And what do you think that Coach Mike Brown saw from him as well?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, I know you and I have gone back and forth today on wrestling, but I'm going to throw a wrestling example out there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Kings rotation. I wish I knew which event specifically this is referring to, and I think I might have even said this on air before, but it's very much like, okay, we know Trey and Davion are coming in, and then at that point, it's just, is that Colby Jones's music I hear? Mm-hmm. Is that Kessler Edwards' music? Like, it's just a complete random. You have no idea who you're going to get. And I think that's really how it should be based off of how all these guys have played. Like, Kessler's played good in moments, hasn't played great enough to really hold down that spot. Duarte.
Somebody's saying Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you. And you know, Duarte is had some moments, but definitely not enough consistency. He's also got the most opportunities of everybody. Yeah. And I think at this point, it's like, look, Colby's played incredibly this season in Stockton. I definitely think, shout out Stockton Kings, who did lose yesterday in the Western Conference Finals in the G League. But I definitely think that they missed Colby a lot in their game. But Colby has shown out all year in Stockton, and I think him just kind of continually playing games, you see what it did for Keon last year or going into this year, I think it's played a huge factor into Colby being ready. And I think, you know, he hit the ground running. We saw him, like you said, play earlier in this year. And there were some good moments. I think people wanted to see more of Colby Jones, and then he was just kind of ripped out of the rotation and, like you said, never to really be seen from again after he got stripped those two times in Houston. I'm for it. I think that we're going to see – I think this is kind of who Colby Jones is. I don't think he's ever – well, I think he's got the capability of lighting up the scoreboard. He definitely can put up 14, 16 points in a game if he starts hitting some threes, but – I think more times than not, he's going to give you exactly what his stat line was. 7 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He's the definition of like a combo guard. He's a 3-and-D guy, and I think I said this yesterday on the post game. I think the key here is, even though it is a rotating cast of people, it's the fact that last year in the playoffs, Davion Mitchell was the outlier on this team. It was, oh my God, Davion has to play on Steph because we have nobody else who can even think about playing defense. So you still have Davion this year. You add Keon to that, and now you add a guy like Colby Jones. It's just getting more bites at the apple of these 3-and-D guys. So you go from one guy almost being force-fed minutes because he's the only one who really commits on that end to now having 3 different options to plug and play. You can play them together. You can do really whatever you want. It's just more versatility. And if you want on the right night, you could throw Duarte in that mix as well.
Who? What would you say is the big difference? Because what you just kind of said sounds like Keon Ellis. So what is the big difference between Colby Jones and Keon Ellis?
I don't think there necessarily is a massive difference in terms of what they bring production-wise. I think Colby is a little bit taller. Colby's listed at 6'6". I think Keon's listed at 6'4". Mm-hmm. Keon's got great wingspan, but I think Colby seems to be a little bit more put together.
Yeah.
Like, Keon's a pretty skinny guy.
Yeah. Colby on the muscle skinny, milk. He on the muscle milk.
A little
milk.
Bit. Yeah. Like, he's pretty built out for a guy who's only a rookie. So I think it's just kind of that. I think that's really the biggest difference is they can play Colby a little bit more at the three, which they did yesterday, and they play Keon a bit at the three. But I think Colby just kind of brings a little bit bigger of a body and more offense than defense, where Keon at this point is more defense than offense.
I was just looking at Chris Duarte's contract details, and
I actually don't know what they are.
Well, the club exercised for this season and next season. He's a restricted free agent after next season, the 2025 season. I think he's going to be a sweetener in some type of deal this summer or before next season's trade deadline, because what you just said, I mean, there's just
too many.
There's no
too many cooks in the kitchen.
There's too many cooks in the kitchen. Yeah. You're always going to go with the younger talent.
Always.
And
Duarte had his chance.
Yes. Thank you. We hope that it worked out. Obviously, we know what he did, you know, with the Pacers all those years ago. But it just I don't see why he would be necessary to be on this roster anymore.
Totally. And the big selling point, honestly, with Duarte at the beginning of the year, like once they traded for Duarte, it's really hilarious. Actually, I remember making fun of it quite a bit. If you look at the first, I don't know, maybe 3 times Chris Duarte was available to the public, the amount of questions about, hey, you played with Domantas Sabonis, how is that going to affect, like, how is that going to help with your familiarity in the system? And that was really like, that was the selling point, is that he had played with Domas before. They had a familiarity. It was meant to be, okay, the Kings do this thing, but then you could just go to this Duarte Sabonis two-man game because they're so familiar with each other that it's additive to the team. It's not necessarily like Duarte is a plug-and-play guy. It's almost like he brings his own separate thing because of his two-man game with Sabonis. We've seen literally none of that.
No.
None of it. So I think that when you throw that on top of the fact he hasn't really hit shots this year, had trouble staying on the floor defensively because of his foul trouble early, and then never really could mix playing good defense with hitting shots at the same time, I think you're right. I feel like he's a guy who, you know, I don't know what his salary figure is, but at the very least, it's a name that you know. So when you're throwing him, like you said, as a sweetener in the deal, it's not like you're getting, and this is no shot at all to these, but, you know, Kessler Edwards probably isn't going to get a fan base like, oh my God, and we got Kessler, you know, the same way Pacers fans were like, and Buddy Hield. Don't forget and Buddy Hield in the trade. It's like, you know, Chris Duarte is a name you've heard of before.
I think he still has that.
Yeah, and I think he's barely holding on to, okay, I remember that guy. And again, Kessler Edwards, even Keon. Like, Keon, obviously, I think is better than all of those guys right now in terms of production. But Keon Ellis as a name thrown in a trade, unless you're really deep into NBA basketball circles, you're probably not too excited about
it. No, that's a great call. He's making $4.1 million this season, Chris Duarte is, and next season he will make $5.8 million.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's not much.
It's not much. So, yeah, and the ascension of a Keon Ellis and the ascension of a Colby Jones, these are good problems to have.
Yes.
And sometimes you take swings and they don't work out. Yep. It helps to take those swings when you have somebody on deck circle that's ready to go. And, you know, Chris Duarte struck out.
Yep.
But fortunately, Keon Ellis got the job done. And now it seems like Colby Jones might be getting the job done as well. And I'm really excited for it.
Yeah.
It does seem like the Kings have a type coming out of Stockton,
sure.
Right? They know what they like. And right now it's these combo guards and they're all working on their handles, trying not to get the cookies taken out of the cookie jar and do some more playmaking to alleviate some of that stress from De'Aaron, because we don't know what's going to happen with Malik Monk. But to have guys like this, to have guys that can hit threes, that can defend at a high level, is always a good thing. When we return, talking South Carolina and the national championship. Ooh. Also, having a really, really in-depth conversation on Caitlin Clark and the hate that she's received. 11:15, we're doing some pocket watching because the injuries, they're starting to cool off, which is a good thing for the Kings, but also could make things a little spicy. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
Perfection. Dawn Staley, South Carolina Gamecocks win the national championship, avenging their loss against the Iowa Hawkeyes and Caitlin Clark from the year before. A perfect, perfect season for South Carolina. And the numbers haven't come out, Chris. I'm sure they will during our show, or maybe they already have, because I'm sure the numbers were ridiculous. They've been breaking records. Women's basketball has this whole time. And it lived up to the hype. It was a good game. South Carolina, just the better team. They got it done. And by the way, did you know where Dawn Staley coached prior to South Carolina?
I do not, but I have a guess now.
T for Temple U. She was at Temple for 8 years.
Really?
And they won the Atlantic 10. She just ran it.
Yeah.
She ran it and then moved on to South Carolina and did her thing. So shout out to Philly native Dawn Staley and holding it down for Temple. So Temple gets like 2% of that national championship. We got it was a long time ago.
Sure.
But Dawn Staley just does her thing, and it was just a great game, and I was locked in.
Yeah.
I was locked in the whole time. I'm going to be locked in tonight with the men's, but it's just different because of those brand names and everybody that you saw. And it was so interesting having Caitlin Clark, but there really wasn't a big name. You had Cardoso, the Brazilian, and she's outstanding.
Ridiculous.
But there wasn't really any as much star power with South Carolina. Yeah. They were just the better team and the bigger team, whereas you had the Hawkeyes where it was Caitlin Clark. And some people are kind of talking down on who she had as teammates. All right, she didn't have the same amount of five stars as a UConn or South Carolina, but she wasn't playing with scrubs. Or did you think so?
I don't love her teammates.
Okay.
I think that her team last year was a little bit better all the way around, Yeah, I mean, I think the clear disadvantage that they had was in the post. I mean, Cardoso was an absolute monster. I mean, she was 5 inches taller than Iowa's biggest person out there. And
Stolke.
Yeah, I mean, Stolke played great in the Final Four game, but she just didn't really have much of an answer for anything Cardoso could bring her, which makes sense. I think that's been a common trend all season long. It's why South Carolina's undefeated is they just absolutely dominate in every area that they dominated in that game. It's hard to score in the post, and you're just going to get absolutely. I mean, the rebounding advantage for South Carolina pretty much made that game impossible for Iowa to win unless Iowa hit 65% of their threes. And, you know, it was good on Iowa to keep it as close as it was for as long as it was. But they showed a graphic before the game. Every single time the Naismith Player of the Year had played the number one overall team, the number one overall team ends up winning, especially in a sport where, you know, if you're dominant, you know, you kind of rise above everything else. And I think that I think at the end of the day, the right team won. It would have been, I mean, just an incredible story, obviously, if Caitlin would have pulled through and won. But I think ultimately this is the result that college, I think they need. I think this is the result, not that the sport needed, but I think this was the right outcome for these two games, for these two teams.
And the most impressive thing is that Dawn lost all of her starters.
Yeah.
They all got drafted and went to the WNBA, and she reloads freshmen coming out of nowhere. I'll tell you
what. Freshmen were ridiculous.
Malaysia Fulwiley was talking so much trash to Caitlin Clark. Yep. She did the too small. I loved all of it. And some of the and some of the other players, I mean Pow Pow, they would just make threes when you least expected it. And Tessa Johnson. So I mean that was
huge.
That was just impressive. Let's hear from Dawn Staley though, who had some really cool things to say about Caitlin Clark and gave her flowers.
I have to congratulate Iowa on an incredible season. Awesome. And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport. And it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
The question is now, with Caitlin Clark gone, and maybe it goes, maybe the momentum that Caitlin Clark built for this sport moves to the WNBA. So there's two separate questions.
Yeah.
The first question that we'll get to a little bit later about Caitlin Clark and the WNBA, we will pocket that for now. The question I want to ask now is as far as women's college basketball, maybe this isn't sustainable because there's only one Caitlin Clark.
Right.
But do you think the growth is sustainable and people will continue? Yeah. Will there continue to be bigger names in women's college basketball and storylines? Now you have the Paige Bueckers story that has just now started because she just lost because they don't go to the NBA after 1 year and things like that and the G League. Do you think that this is sustainable to some degree?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think it's crazy to me how people say, oh, this is just a blip. This is just a one-off. And it's like, I mean, we've had situations like this before where, you know, Candace Parker was huge when she was in college. You could argue she wasn't as big when she hit the NBA, or WNBA, which is what I think a lot of people are saying about Caitlin. But just in terms of the college game, this happens. If there's a special talent out there, we end up hearing about it, even if, quote-unquote, we don't pay attention to the women's game. You know, Rebecca Lobo was huge when she played. I think that it's, you know, Maya Moore, obviously. The list goes on and on and on. And I think it's just going to be next up. Yeah, if Paige decides to, I think Paige has the decision of whether she wants to stay at UConn for one more year or she enters the draft. I'd imagine she probably stays. It'll be her time to shine next year, and you'll probably get a lot of attention on her side. Juju's up next. Absolutely. Like I said, Texas has a freshman that's really good. Notre Dame has a freshman who's ridiculous. I just think year after year after year, you're going to hear more and more names. And as Paige plays somebody next year in the finals, who knows, maybe it'll be Juju Watkins and it'll be the same kind of story that we had this year where you have a redemption arc and all that stuff. I just think it's going to continually get past as long as there's still that that talent that's still coming up. I think that's really where, you know, the game has kind of faltered is the, okay, you have a big moment, but what's following it up? And that follow-up hasn't been there immediately every time. And it feels like there's as good of a chance for that lead up or for that build up to have happened this year. I think Juju's going to be a really big star moving forward. I think Paige Bueckers is going to continue this on to next year. It's tough to tell. I don't think it'll ever get to Caitlin level, but I think Juju has the, like you're telling me, if Juju doesn't have 5 50-point games next year, we're not going to be paying attention, and then seeing how she continues. Maybe she breaks the all-time record for most 50-point games. Like, you're telling me people aren't going to tune into that? I just think it's going to be on the players to continue to be great. I just think that there is a good line of players to do that.
Yeah, and the Caitlin Clark thing, it's also how she did it. So,
yeah.
Juju, she is just an all-around score, but as far as it being as polarizing as pulling up from right after half court and things like that, that won't be at least not now, won't be the calling card like it was with Caitlin Clark. But I definitely think there is enough to at least have it similar, right? Yeah. I mean, there's only one Caitlin Clark. Now I'll ask the second question as far as Caitlin Clark moving into the WNBA, not even necessarily about whether or not she'll be successful or not.
Yeah.
It's more about, do you think, and this kind of ties into the hate that we're going to break down as well, do you think that Caitlin Clark's, her promise and her stardom, will it be able to drive WNBA or will it fall off? And I guess she has to be somewhat successful for it to grow, right? I think people will tune in, and if she's pedestrian, they'll tune out.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think the WNBA is getting a huge benefit from the fact season starts in a month. The draft is this week, I think it's this weekend. So it's all kind of stacking onto each other. It's not like, okay, the story's here and then it disappears for 4 months. And then it's like, oh yeah, I forgot Caitlin's in the WNBA and that even started. Right. Like, it's going to kind of feel like it's just a continuation of the story. So yeah, I mean, I think tons of people will probably tune in Caitlin's first week, depending on who she plays. If they play the Aces or if they play the Liberty, I'm sure that'll be a massively viewed game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, the WNBA season is longer than what I think people think. I mean, at the same time, it's 30 games. So I think it'll have people's attention for the first week, maybe the first 2 weeks, as it kind of does, as the news cycle kind of goes. But you probably won't pay much more attention to it until probably the end of the WNBA season, where if the Indiana Fever are in a playoff position, I'm sure all that hype will ramp right back up. But yeah, if Caitlin and the Fever just kind of have a 500 season or below that, I'm sure that some of the steam goes away. But that's where the WNBA is not women's college basketball. There's stars that is all they need to do is get you in the door. Mm-hmm. Once you're in the house, that's where you get to see, oh my gosh, the Aces and the Liberty and, you know, the Connecticut Sun. There's really good teams out there that'll draw your attention, and that's where they're hoping you continue to watch. Caitlin is just kind of the gateway drug, I guess, if you will.
Sure. Well, and relatively speaking, the NBA struggles with the same thing.
Absolutely.
The NBA struggles with the same thing as far as getting people to watch. That's why they came out with the in-season tournament. Right. So this isn't...
Watch regular season basketball. Right. It's a struggle.
So I think the WNBA, their whole thing is, hey, you know, if we can get Caitlin in to the playoffs, that's where our bread's going to be buttered. Any game that she has moving forward. I mean, this is essentially, to me, this is LeBron James status.
Yeah.
This is Wembanyama.
Absolutely.
This is Michael Jordan. I mean,
get her on ESPN. Every time she plays the Aces or Liberty, that should be on ESPN.
It has to be.
You just have to do that.
You won't have anything like it. And to that point, and to your point about who Caitlin was playing with at Iowa, now she's going to be playing with other pros, right?
Aaliyah Boston.
Right?
Last year's national champ.
Who she beat. Yeah.
Who
Caitlin beat in the Final Four. So I think that Caitlin will be successful. Will it be what she was in college? Right. Who knows? But I don't think it has to be that for the WNBA to – I think it has to be somewhat like that.
Absolutely.
But the WNBA can – anything that Caitlin brings will be a win. When we return, it's time to have that conversation. The Caitlin Clark hate, fair or foul – do you feel like it's more than with other athletes? And do you feel like other WNBA players are doing right or wrong by her? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.